Thank you, members, and let me just start by thanking our staff here in the Senate. They've done a remarkable job of, in the last few days, getting the omnibus tax bill rolled together and copied, and you'll feel that the paper's not even hot, so very good job to all of them. Members, what you have in front of you are the articles of the omnibus tax bill. My intent was to have counsel just briefly walk through what's in here today, and then we'll adjourn, and tomorrow morning we'll come back at 8:30, take amendments, take some brief testimony from members of the public that want to comment on it, and then move the bill to the Senate floor. Tomorrow morning it'll be reported to the floor, and then Friday take the bill up on the floor for passage. So, counsel?
Mr. Chair, starting with the department articles, those are basically the ones that were discussed in committee, and the changes that were recommended by the committee were made to that. Not going to detail on that. Starting out with the income tax article, Article 1, included in that is the home care credit, which was Senator Rest's bill. The only change we made to that was to cut the credit in half, the maximum credit. Also in there is the military and AmeriCorps subtractions, an investment tax credit. That was Senator Langseth's bill. Also in there is the active military credit that's currently in law was increased. So for those who are currently serving in combat duty, their credit for service of month will double. Also is Section 8 is the citizenship credit. That was Senator Lynch's bill. And after a revised revenue estimate, that was put in the bill as the bill was originally drafted. Section 10 was some language that the Senate has had repeatedly about deferred compensation. Sections 11 and 12 were the chair's bill regarding 1099 and withholdings. It also includes a random sample audit. And then finally, Senator Rest's bill for taxpayer assistance grants to nonprofits. The second article is the federal update. This is basically all of the things that were in the first tax bill that went out, except this conforms to the federal changes prospectively through 2007 and beyond. Article 3 is the corporate income tax article. In that are basically two provisions. Most of the sections deal with foreign operating corporations, and most of that is just language that the Senate has already had in the past. Also in that article is the governor's recommendation for acceleration of the single sales factor. That's in Section 4. The next article is sales and use tax. The first part of that is Senator Langseth's bill regarding the state fair sales tax capture to go to capital improvements. The next section is Senator Skoy's bill regarding emergency vehicle exemptions. Section 4 is the vending machine exemption. That has been limited to only milk and water sold in vending machines at schools, and the savings must be passed along to the schools. Section 5 is Senator Kubley's grain bill, farm machinery exemption. Section 6 is the manufactured and modular home sourcing. Section 7 is more of the emergency vehicle exemption. That's for the repair and replacement parts. Section 8 is the capital equipment exemption, fully upfront and automatic. Section 9 is Senator Mary Olson's bill for logging tire exemptions. Section 10 is the fencing exemption, which was part of Senator Cooley's bill and also part of Senator Skoy's amendment to that bill. Section 11 is Senator Saxhog's Itasca County Public Safety Radio exemption. Section 12 is the Duluth Food and Beverage Tax. The following ones are all local option sales tax, including Cook County, the extension of the current tax, Proctor's extension. Section 19 is the Thief River Falls retroactive exemption from sales tax for their regional center, which has been in the Senate bill for several years. Section 20 is the Bemidji local option sales tax. That was slightly changed to limit the amount that the city could spend. Clearwater local option sales taxes in Section 21. The uses on that was limited. from the original bill. Cloquet, local option sales tax, the uses for that was limited as well. The Crookston local option sales tax in 23, Section 23, the uses for that was also limited slightly. And Section 24 is the Cook County Lodging and Emissions Tax Bill. Section 25 was the Ely local option sales tax. Section 26 is the Minnetonka Water Treatment Facility exemption, and that was changed to conform to the testimony that was given in committee so that it would apply only to the capital equipment. Section 27 is the North Mankato local option sales tax, and 28 is Winona's local option sales tax. And, Mr. Chair, I would just move to Article 16 and then would allow Ms. Off to come up and go through her articles. Article 16 is miscellaneous article. The first four sections and Section 6 are from the State and Local Government Committee local impact notes. Section 7 and 8 refer to the budget reserve. That was Senator Pogemiller's bill that was heard on the floor today. Section 9 deletes an obsolete reference that's made obsolete by a repeal later on in the section. Sections 10, 11, 12, 13, 18, and 19 are the Department of Revenue collections provisions. Those were not changed after they came back from judiciary. Additionally, Sections 5, 14, 15, 16, and 17 are the revenue disclosure provisions, and that was added. The only change was a small cross-reference that was made in the Judiciary Committee. And then Section 21 is something that was discussed last time in committee about having a joint legislative subcommittee on the sales and use tax. This would create a joint committee from members of both the House and the Senate to look at various impacts of the sales and use tax and all of the exemptions currently in statute. Section 22 requires the Commissioner of Revenue to maintain and update the data that was originally required in the Tax Study Commission, and those were relating to property tax studies. That section also requires the Commissioner to provide that information upon request to the chairs of the two legislative tax committees. And finally, Section 23 is a repealer, which repeals the section in statute that requires the governor to propose a rebate plan.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman and members. I'll start going through the, chapter or Article 5, which is a property tax article. It begins on page 9 of the summary. Sections 1, 2, and 5 are the debt service equalization modifications for the computation of the net debt service tax capacity. That was a bill of Senator Wergen's. And I'll go very briefly through everything that had already been adopted by the property tax division. Referendum market value in Section 3 relates to the fact that the seasonal residential recreational property will no longer be in the referendum market value tax base. Requires that when property is sold and the change of use by the new purchaser will change the classification, the sales ratio study should take that into account as soon as possible. Sections 6 and 20 have to, they provide a property tax exemption for the homestead of totally disabled military veterans. Section 7 was a bill of Senator Box dealing with an exemption for modular homes that are models that are held by the dealer. Section 8 was a bill of Senator Siebens that provided an exemption for apprenticeship training facilities. Section 9 is another property tax exemption. This was included in an amendment that was offered to Senator Kubley's bill last week or earlier this week for monosloped roofs that are installed over feedlot or manure storage areas. Section 10 is a new provision. This is a bill of Senator Jungbauer's that I think had not yet made it to the tax committee. It provides an exemption from property taxes for personal property that's part of an electric peaking plant. Section 11 is a certificate of real estate value intended to reflect changes in use of property. Section 12 deals with limited market value, but only to provide that the current limited market value law will be extended to the Homestead Resort property. It does not extend the phase out of limited market value. Sections 13 through 15 change provisions in the Green Acres Law. The income requirement is changed so that the property will qualify if in at least one of the three preceding years, 25% of the family income must be derived from agricultural production, and this would be as it's reflected on Schedule F for federal tax purposes, and the production income must be at least $300 plus $10 per acre of all acres in the parcel. So that's kind of a different approach to the qualification for Green Acres treatment. It also specifies that Green Acres deferments, which currently apply to most special assessments, would not apply to special assessments of watershed districts and drainage authorities. The treatment of property that contains a conservation easement is changed so that it gives the assessor some flexibility and enables the assessor to adjust the value, so it could be adjusted upward or downward. Section 17 was a bill of Senator Fredrickson's that reinstates the old practice of homestead borrowing when a non-homestead property is combined in the same building with a homestead. Section 18 is a provision that's new to this bill, but it was included in last year's omnibus tax bill. Requires that if the owner of property that's located in a city that has a population over 25,000, if for a relative homestead, if part of that property is rented out, the city can require the owner of the property to register that property and maintain open records as to which properties are used in this way. Section 19 is the Class 4D low-income rental residential housing. Reduces the threshold for qualifying for this property. Currently, you have to have 75% of the units qualifying. This change would bring that down to 25 and would also extend this treatment to property that is subject to a local local government financing arrangement. There's new treatment for rural lands. There's a new classification that will apply to rural lands that are currently split among a series of different kinds of classes and present difficulties for assessors. The rural land will typically be subject to a class rate of 1%, but there's a class rate of 0.55% for properties that might have qualified for a sustainable forest and they meet the requirements of the management plan, but they're not currently enrolled in the program. The section also extends this classification so that agricultural property or that short rotation woody crops are included in the definition of agricultural products. That was also something in last year's tax bill. Section 22 gradually increases the class rate on electric generation personal property over a period of 3 years. Section 23 eliminates the separate property class for non-commercial seasonal recreational or cabin property so that now cabins will be treated as if they were non-homestead residential property. Sections 25 through 27 extend the application of the state general tax to electric generating machinery and also change the tax rate so that it would be frozen at the rate that was imposed for taxes payable in 2004. And then there are other changes involved here in the change, removing the seasonal rec property and changing the distribution of the total tax burden. Section 28 is a new provision that would create a floor for payments for property in the Sustainable Forest Incentive Program. Currently, there are the floor would go from $150 an acre to $5 an acre. Sections 29 and 30 were taken out of the transportation bill when that was heard by the tax committee, and that expands Metropolitan Transit Taxing District so that it covers the entire seven-county metropolitan area. Sections 31 and 32 are special law amendments dealing with the Cook Orr Hospital District and the Cook County Hospital District, and both of these have the effect of eliminating specific lower levy limitations that apply to these districts and instead making these districts' levies subject to the general hospital district limitation. Section 33 creates an education improvement account and requires that $78 million of the proceeds from the state general levy would be deposited in that account for taxes payable in 2009, and in later years, $83,334,000 will be deposited in the account each year. Section 34 requires the Commissioner of Revenue to develop a new means of valuing agricultural property, and Section 35 repeals a number of sections related to other provisions in the bill. The summary of Article 6 that's included in the stapled summary actually relates to the department property tax article. So you might want to skip to, I think everyone has a one-page summary of Article 6 in the bill, which is aids and credits and the property tax refund. The first section there, and if you don't, we have more copies available. The first section there is the Vanderveer bill that was heard last week in committee that deals with a township that has become a city, provides that they'll be able to continue to receive PILT payments. This would be contingent on the new city not enacting any kind of ordinance that would ban hunting in the city limits. Section 2 increases the residential homestead market value credit so that it would apply at a rate of 0.4% of the first $86,000 of market value up to a maximum of $344,000. Section 3 increases the market value tier for the agricultural land market value credit from $115,000 to $150,000, and increases the maximum credit to $345,000 from $345,000 to $450,000. The property tax refund provisions have the effect of increasing the maximum property tax refund and reducing the percentage paid by homeowners. There are no changes in the renter's refund. These are just updated for the current indexing. Excuse me. Section 7 modifies the city aid base so that it returns to the base that was certified in 2003 and then includes aid base adjustments that were permanent since 2003. Also has two new aid base adjustments. One is for Taylor's Falls and one is for Manoman. Each of those had been in effect for one or two previous years, and now they're made permanent. The small city aid base is increased from $6 to $9 per capita. On the county tax base equalization aid, the per capita amount is increased from $185 to $215, and the tax rate is reduced from 9.45 to 8.33%. The county transition aid is made permanent instead of being phased out, and it's made permanent at the 2007 level. Townships will receive a new aid that's equal to 40% of the HACA that they received in 2001. Section 11 eliminates the taconate aid offset from the local government aid formula. Section 12 also modifies the aid distribution to cities, limits the increase to $56 per capita plus the aid base adjustment in the case of small cities. And then for aids payable in 2008 only, no city's LGA can be less than it received in 2007. Then we've also incorporated Senator Moy's bill that dealt with the volatility and evening out the changes in the formula. Section 13 increases the LGA appropriation for cities by $150 million. Section 14 eliminates the or increases the appropriation for county program aids by $60 million in total. Sections 15 and 16 are the PILT payments for loop lands, somewhat modified from what was before the committee, so they only apply to a smaller group of loop lands. Section 17 makes permanent some aids that are paid to the city, county, and school district of Manoman, and also provides that those are offset by any amounts of payments in lieu of taxes made by the tribes to those entities. Section 18 requires a study of aids to local governments. And then back to the summary on page 20. Article 7 is the minerals article. Sections 1 and 2 provide that ore docks and power plants that are located at taconite facilities that become subject to taxation later in the bill will be included within the range fiscal disparities formula. Sections 3 and then a couple of other sections later on are the bill that the committee heard last week, I believe, of Senator Tomasoni's that allows the IRRRB to buy forest land in the taconite assistance area and use that as the Iron Range Miners Memorial Forest. If there are sales of timber or minerals off that land, the money would be deposited in an Iron Range Miners Memorial Forest account and then used for purposes of the Douglas J. Johnson Economic Protection Trust Fund. Section 4 limits the amount that can be distributed to taconite producers from the Taconite Economic Development Fund. Currently, they receive distributions based on 30.1 cents per ton. This new formula would provide that level of payment for the first 3 million tons and then a flat amount that's based on a 3 million ton distribution for any producer who produces between $3 and $8 million tons a year. And then if the production exceeds $8 million, the producers would then get an additional distribution equal to 60.2 cents for every ton that's over 8 million tons in the year. Section 5 provides that the exemption that's in the current production tax for producers of direct reduced ore will be eliminated if for plants that are not under construction with all of their environmental permits taken care of before the beginning of 2009. Section 6 modifies the production or the property tax exemption that applies to taconite production facility property so that the exemption no longer applies to power plants or ore docks that are located at a taconite production facility. Section 7 increases the distribution of production tax proceeds to school districts by 3 cents per ton. This amount would be taken from the escalator. The distribution of production tax proceeds to counties is modified so that 5 cents of the distribution that had gone to the county general funds would now be paid into the county road and bridge funds. Section 9 is related to the escalator change that gives more money to the school districts. Section 10 is related to the purchase of the forest land with money out of the Douglas J. Johnson Economic Protection Trust Fund. Section 11 provides for the distribution of certain funds to the City of Virginia in 2008 for extension and replacement of its water and sewer systems. Section 12 provides that certain amount of money that is paid out of an economic development fund in 2007 would pay interest. The interest that accrues on those funds would go, rather than be held by St. Louis County, which is a fiscal agent, would go to the particular recipients of those funds. Also modifies the distribution of 10 cents per ton that would go to the IRRRB for a Highway 1 corridor projects in the cities of Babbitt, Cook, Ely, or Tower. Sections 13 through 15 would apply the aggregate tax to taconite tailings, crushed rock, and architectural or dimension stone and dimension granite that are removed from taconite mines, and the proceeds of these taxes, the counties would collect them, and the proceeds of the taxes would be given to the IRRRB. Section 16 was a bill of Senator Scogin's, authorized the town of Scambler to impose the aggregate tax. This has been clarified to make sure that the proceeds of the tax will only be used for road and bridge and reclamation projects, couldn't be used for property tax reduction. Section 17 relates to the Miners Fort Memorial Forest. Section 18 and 19 provide for an elimination of the offset of agricultural aids that currently applies to taconite production tax that is paid to schools. And Section 18 provides the appropriation of the money for increased general education aid to accommodate the elimination of that offset. Article 8 is the local development article. Sections 1, 2, let's see, 1 through 7 have to do with Senator Scogin's bill that created a renaissance zone for the property in Fergus Falls that was formerly the state hospital. The bill is essentially the same as what was heard by the committee, except that the $10,000 per person individual income tax credit is removed. And later in the bill, there's a limitation of $1 million on the amount that can be used by the city for its subsidies to the businesses. So the businesses would have to deal with the city and abide by that limitation. Section 8 is the sales tax exemption that applies to the facility in Egan, the West Public Thompson West. This has been modified, though, so that the tax will be paid at the time of purchase and will be refunded over a four-year period, but only if within a year after the project begins, the owner of the facility has to certify that there are no fewer than 8,600 full-time equivalent workers at the facility. So they're going to have to certify that for 4 years in order to get the entire refund of that sales tax. And the sales tax exemption has been restricted somewhat as well. Section 9 was a provision of Senator Senjum's dealing with a sales tax exemption for the biobusiness center in the city of Rochester. It does not apply to the materials used for the parking ramp or related infrastructure. And again, a refund is required there. Section 10 was Senator Langseth's bill appropriating $1.5 million in additional Border City Enterprise Zone allocations. Section 11 provides that no additional businesses will be eligible for Job Z benefits unless the business subsidy agreement was entered into before May 1st of this year. Sections 12, 13, 14 also apply to the Renaissance Zone for Fergus Falls. Section 15 is a new provision. It requires that the amount of fiscal disparities that would have gone into the fiscal disparities pool because of the new construction in the phase two of the Mall of America project will not be distributed in the general formula for fiscal disparities, but again would be given to the city of Bloomington out of the fiscal disparities pool. And section 16 coordinates with that. Sections 17 and 18 were Senator Dibble's bill dealing with the MCDA or its successor's operation of scattered site housing fiscal tax increment financing districts. The number of parcels that may be included for Minneapolis were increased from 200 to 400. Section 19 extends the duration of the tax increment financing district at Bloomington, where the second phase of the Mall of America is going to be built for 7 years. That will terminate the end of 2025. Section 20 allows the use of some money that have been appropriated for grants to businesses in the International Economic Development Zone to be used for a study. Section 21 incorporates the original provision from the city of Bloomington that would allow it to modify the boundaries of its TIF district so that the longer-lasting district will include all of the new construction. There are new provisions added to this, though. A public hearing on the district modification is required to be held at a specific time, and a unanimous vote of the members of the governing body who are present at the meeting is required in order to approve the extension of the tax increment district, both the duration and the size. It's required that the use of man-made steel to the extent practicable is required for the construction of the facility. There are provisions added that a public sector project labor agreement is required and a labor peace agreement for a hotel employees at the site of the project is included. Section 21 authorizes the city of Bloomington to impose a series of local taxes and use the money for the activities at the new mall expansion. There could be a local sales tax of up to 1% and an admissions and recreation tax of up to 1% within a special taxing district that is just at the Mall of America site. The city is also authorized to impose a lodging tax of up to 1%, and that would be citywide. Section 23 is Senator Dahl's bill dealing with the Burnsville Northeast Quadrant TIF district. This is the same as was seen by the committee, except that his bill allowed these districts to be created up through 2027, and this bill just brings it down to 2017. Section 24 is Senator Chaudhry's bill dealing with Columbia Heights TIF district. Section 25 is Senator Limmer's bill on the Dayton TIF district, and neither of those were changed from what was before the committee as it was amended there. Section 26 is the Egan TIF district. This has been modified from what was presented to the committee by eliminating the use of increments on structured parking facilities and for wetlands remediation. Section 27 is a compromise from the bill that was presented that would have enabled, that would have stricken the limitation on the location of small cities in the TIF law. Instead, this just provides that certain named cities near the city of Rochester will be considered small cities despite the fact that they're within the 10 miles from the city of Rochester. Section 28 is Senator Day's bill on the Faribault TIF project. Section 29 is Senator Chaudhry's bill for New Brighton TIF district. Section 30 is Senator Wieger's bill on North St. Paul TIF. Section 31 is requires the Commissioner of Administration to distribute $1 million of an earlier appropriation that had been made in 2006 to the Department of Administration for the demolition for dealing with DHS campuses. Instead, this would be given directly to the city to maintain the site to provide security and utilities while a new use is being sought. Section 32 relates to the Burnsville TIF. Article 9 is the public finance article with a few additions and only includes the sections that were accepted by the committee when it heard the bill on Monday. Sections 1, 2, let's see.
We gave me the budget reserve.
All of the provisions through Section 14, which is on page 31 of the summary, are the provisions that were accepted by the committee on Monday. So unless anybody has any questions, we can just skip those. Section 14 is Senator Betzold's bill on the post-employment benefit trust. It includes a couple of amendments that the committee made when it heard that bill. Section 15 authorizes the issuance of $44 million in bus bonds by the Met Council. This was taken out of the transportation bill. Sections 16 and 17 were Senator Bach's bill allowing issuance of municipal bonds to fund post-employment benefit liabilities. Section 18 was in the public finance bill. Section 19 was also part of Senator Betzold's bill as that was passed by the committee. Section 20, Crane Lake Township, was a bill of Senator Bach's heard earlier in the session. And Section 21 was an authorization for the city of Winsted to issue bonds. This was a bill of Senator Dills. It was heard some time ago. Article 10 is a special taxes article. Section 1 was Senator Moore's bill having to deal with a exemption from the insurance premiums tax for providers of life insurance and accidental death and other insurances for state employees and their dependents. This is intended to help get Minnesota companies out from under a retaliatory tax situation. Sections 2 and 3 extend the current Ramsey and Hennepin County deed and mortgage tax provisions by 5 years. They're scheduled to expire in 2008, and Senator Rest had brought in a bill that would have eliminated those sunsets. These just extend both of them for 5 years. Sections 4 and 5 create a parallel mortgage and deed tax and environmental fund use for St. Louis County. Sections 6 and 7 provide that treatment for Dakota County. 8 and 9 provide it for Anoka County. And each of these provisions have the same expiration date of January 1, 2013, and the uses have been tightened up somewhat so that they're not available to use by a regional rail authority, and they also focus more on the remediation. Section 10 is a new provision. It extends
Mr.
the...
Mr. Chair, sorry to interrupt.
Senator
Johnson. Council, does it provide a description for any of these sites that it can be used for? It just is a basic environmental cleanup type language.
Right. Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, there are no specific descriptions of particular sites. It just describes the uses that can be made and therefore environmental cleanup and remediation. Section 10 extends the exemption that's in current law that would have expired this year. The exemption from paying the petroleum tank release cleanup fee for 2 years. The same company that is exempted from the payment is also made ineligible to receive any reimbursement for that same period. And I think that's it. And the rest of the bill is the department bills and the miscellaneous articles.
Questions, members?
I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Johnson.
I've looked through Senator Ortman's, myself, Senator Dibbles, and I've gone back to the work cart back there. Where's Article 15? It's just a miscellaneous article.
15?
Are we done? Are we that far that I can ask that? Department of Revenue miscellaneous.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, the department articles are all bundled into one document, and that starts Article 1, Department Income and Franchise Taxes. And so all of the department articles are in this, and that the miscellaneous that should start at the bottom of page 109. I'm sorry, 101.
Mr. Chairman, Selner, there's a piece in here on Section 2, Section 3, State Reimbursement of Supplemental Firefighter Benefits. It's going to go to the municipality instead of the Relief Association. Isn't that an Ann Rust bill?
In the department, it's part of the department bill.
And then they have to file their financial reports to get the money.
She has one this year.
I'm not sure that the relief, the firefighters are going to love that.
Yep. Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, Senator Rust does have another bill on this subject, but this was just part of the department's proposal for instructing the commissioner as to how to transmit the reimbursements to the municipality rather than to the relief association. And I'm not sure how, to be honest, I'm not sure how that coordinates with Senator Rest bill, but we can check on that and let you know by tomorrow.
Mr. Chair and Council, I don't think it makes any difference regarding the Rest piece. I just know that the firefighters want this in the Relief Association. They don't want it to go through the municipality.
Mm-hmm. We'll check with the department by tomorrow morning, but that was a department provision in their technical bill. Any other questions, members? Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, as you were going along or as Senate Council was going on, I was trying to follow. Just check on the spreadsheet, see what was happening. I know we're going to go through the spreadsheet, but in particular, I noticed that the sales tax for transit, I didn't see it on here, or the wheelage tax for the counties. Now, I know that that's a county revenue raiser, but are the provisions generally accounted for in our spreadsheet? What was the rule in preparing the spreadsheet about what went on and what didn't go on?
There's not a wheelage tax in this bill. There was one in the transportation bill when it left. The only thing that we took out of the transportation bill and carried in the tax bill was the expansion of the transit taxing district and giving the Met Council an additional $44 million of bonding authority. Those were both provisions that were in the transportation bill. Because it's a taxing issue, I mentioned to Senator Murphy when his bill went through here that those provisions that passed out of the Transportation Committee really belong in the tax bill, not in the transportation bill. So that's the only thing that I'm aware of that is in the tax bill that was in Senator Murphy's bill.
Mr. Chair, it's bonding only for the metro area, or is it expansion of the transit taxing district?
That's in here.
Or both?
It's an expansion of the taxing district, and it's an additional $44 million of bonding authority. Both of those provisions were in Senator Murphy's bill when it came here.
Mr. Chair, could Council just advise again where that section is in the bill?
Transit? Is she looking?
The bonding.
The bonding? Public finance, yeah.
The bonding is in the public finance article.
And the transit tax district is in property tax.
And the transit tax is in the property tax article.
Thank you.
Any other questions, members? Well, Council's here if you would like to have some help finding something. Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking at Article 6, Section 1. It says the Metro County Wheelage Tax.
What's that? What's that? Look.
There's this one here. Right.
There's,
yeah, that's
it's in the summary, Madam Chair. Or Mr. Chair, excuse me.
Proposal. And it just clears up some old language that's.
Council?
excuse me. Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, Article 4 of the document with the department provisions in is a Department of Revenue proposal on the wheelage tax, and it doesn't impose the wheelage tax. It just eliminates some obsolete language that had been in the previous wheelage tax that dealt with reduction of taxes by specific amounts for each of the counties. And so it's just kind of a cleanup of some obsolete provisions. It doesn't do anything to actually impose a wheelage tax.
So Mr. Chair and Ms. Zellner, it doesn't change it from 5 to 20 like Murphy's bill did?
No, Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, it would just be in the event that a wheelage tax is imposed, this would eliminate these offsets that applied back in the 70s.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Sellner, could you repeat which article is that in?
Yeah, it's a little confusing, Senator Johnson. It's in this the thickest document that you have here, which is a compilation of all the department proposals. It says DEPART on the upper right-hand corner. And then look on page 49. It's in this document. It's Article 4, Section 1.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. Page 13 of the summary, Article 6, Department of Revenue, Property Taxes, and AIDS, talks about the Metro County Wheelage Tax. And I just want to clarify, are you saying, I can't remember, does Dakota County currently have authority to raise the wheelage tax, and that's what we're referring to here?
$5.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, this would not give any county any new authority that they don't already have. This just clarifies what the offset would be if they did impose the tax.
Well, and Mr. Chair, that's my question, though. What is the current authority, if we could just clarify the record?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, I'd like to check on that and get back to you tomorrow morning. I'm not sure of the answer to that.
Thank you.
Anything else, members? There's no other questions. Members, we're going to lock up the room. Senator Ortman?
Mr. Chair, we still are not balanced in this bill. Is that correct?
That's correct, Senator Ortman.
And just this, so I can understand, the balance is going to come from the next phase,
correct,
of the property, or excuse me, of the tax bill, and that's essentially going to be income tax increases.
There will, Senator Ortman, as we discussed yesterday, there's a bill coming out of finance, I believe, tomorrow. It'll be coming to this committee that we will take up on Friday. We then will have to include some money to pay for some of the additional education spending that finance sends us, and at the same time we'll pay for the property tax relief in this bill that's not paid for. So much like the state budget's not in balance today, we've passed all of our spending bills, but we haven't passed our tax bill yet. And until we get the final bill passed off the Senate floor on Saturday, after Saturday's passage, the state budget of the Senate will be in balance in 08-09, and the budget will be in balance for 10 and 11 also.
Mr. Chair, any hints available about the scope and size application of the income tax increases?
Preliminary draft.
Senator Ortman, I think until we see what finance sends us for sure, we know that finance is going to send us some money on the K-12 school formula, some additional money on higher ed to help with tuition, and they're going to send us a request for some additional spending in the early childhood area. And we will have to adjust some income tax revenue so that we can raise the money needed in this bill in addition to what finance sends us. And I don't serve on the finance committee, and I believe they're taking the bill up tomorrow, so I'm not certain what the number is.
Thank you.
Why do we have to raise the revenue to?
Members, Senator Larson can't be here tomorrow on the markup of the bill, and so if we could, members, I'd like to give him an opportunity to offer an amendment because we'd like to hold the rest of the amendments for tomorrow, give you some opportunity to work with Senate Counsel to get them prepared. But because Senator Larson can't be here, I'd appreciate it if we could give him the opportunity to offer the Local-1 amendment today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the local dash one amendment, and this is to the local development article of the bill.
Number.
So as everybody's digging that out.
Thanks.
And is on page 22. Members, I think I've been, as we've discussed the policy of whether or not we should provide assistance to the expansion of the Mall of America, I've been very, I guess, outspoken in terms of my concern about the extension of a local tax increment financing district beyond what, in fact, the local contribution or pledge is already in place, which on the phase two of the project is in potentially, depending on how big the project gets, is in excess of $80 million. And that's in addition to what local taxpayers have provided in terms of subsidy for the first phase. There are a number of different options, local options for the local unit of government in this case, to raise funds to assist with the development of the mall. But many of those, or most of those, I would say, are very focused to a user pays provision. However, it's my feeling that given the my opposition to further use of tax increment financing in terms of the extension, again, there will be significant tax increment financing as a part of phase two that's already been agreed to, I offer the local dash one amendment that would require voters in the city of Bloomington to have the opportunity to vote in the next general or special election to, in fact, provide approval to enact this this section of law. And we've had a full discussion of this at a previous hearing, I know, but I'd be happy to answer any questions. But I offer this as my position on the local financing portion, again, wanting to go to the voters and ask them how they feel about it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Questions, members? Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do we always require a referendum on TIF, or sometimes,
Senator
occasionally?
Senator Johnson, I don't believe we ever do, but I'll verify that with counsel.
And Mr. Chairman?
Senator Johnson?
The intention on the action for this tonight, this amendment?
My intention is to, because Senator Larson can't be here tomorrow, is to give him an opportunity to offer this amendment and vote on it tonight.
All the members tonight?
Just this one. Just this one. Because he can't be here tomorrow. So this is his only opportunity to amend the bill before the bill gets to the Senate floor.
So
assuming we have the votes to pass it out of here tomorrow.
So, Mr. Chair, we're taking an amendment referendum on a TIF district.
That is what the amendment does.
And we normally don't do that.
I don't believe we've ever authorized a TIF district that required a referendum. This would be new ground for the Senate.
Mr. Chair and Senator Johnson, that's a good question. I think I've been asked that question a number of times in the last couple of days about would this create a new precedence if, in fact, this committee adopts and the Senate adopts this provision moving forward. I would just argue that I as a member that represents this community, am willing to say I think there's a limit to which we ought to move forward with the use of TIF on this project. And this is kind of where I draw the line. I know different members have different feelings about that. I also know that there is the discussion about precedents, and I'm not insensitive to that. On the other hand, this is the tool that I have this evening to view or to act to try to protect the taxpayers that live in my district. And so that's why I'm offering it.
Does anybody in the audience want to testify on the idea of requiring a referendum on the TIF for the city of Bloomington?
Mr. Chair, while we're waiting for any possible testifiers, can I ask, is the first phase of the Mall America Bloomington only TIF? Is that the community it's in?
Phase one, was it strictly a Bloomington TIF? Senator Johnson, could you repeat your question for council?
The original TIF district that was created for the Mall of America, is it the city of Bloomington that the Mall of America is in? Was the TIF just to the city of Bloomington?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, both the city, I'm not sure who was the authority, if it was the city or the Port Authority, but the TIF district is within the city. I'm not sure if that's what your question is.
I guess what I'm asking is, did it extend beyond the city of Bloomington since it?
No, Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, no, it was totally within the city, and it was just within the vicinity of the mall.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Larson, not to make this more controversial, but since this does have kind of a large impact, maybe you might consider expanding the TIF district to the surrounding communities of Richfield, and I don't know what else is down there.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Johnson, we'd to the degree that we could lessen the impact on the Bloomington property taxpayer, we'd be happy to bring anybody in that would like to come in, I guess. But
probably would have more people wanting to testify, Senator Johnson.
I'm sure.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, you know, this is I understand this is breaking new ground and is perhaps a road that some don't want to go down. But in fact, I offer it tonight to as a protection for the property taxpayers in my district. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And you asked, having seen this for the first time, so
Mr. Mayor, we'd like your name for the record.
Oh, excuse me, Gene Winstead, Mayor of the City of Bloomington. Having seen it for the first time, the precedent that I think would be set here, I don't think we would be supportive of this type of amendment going forth. One of the things I think going forward is, as the runs have been made and the taxes paid and all these things, this TIF district funds itself well over the course of a duration and things like that. And the Mall of America, I think, can be stated through phase one and phase two, has not put an undue burden or, you know, the subsidy to the taxpayers of the city of Bloomington. So I think that this would be something unnecessary. And just to layer on the approximate $80,000 for the city of Bloomington to run either a special election or it probably wouldn't cost that much if we were to add it on in the general. But, you know, there's a cost there, too. We are conscious of those kinds of expenses. So.
Mr. Griffith.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Larson, we've had many conversations about.
Mr. Griffith, your name for the record.
Thank you. Bill Griffith, representing Mall of America Company. We've had many conversations about the proposal, and so I understand Senator Larson's comments. One of the things that we have to keep in mind in considering this this amendment and this bill is that very little has been collected on phase two because it was delayed for over 10 years. And so the extension is essentially a recapture of what was authorized going back to 1988. It's not collecting more. It's essentially capturing what was authorized with the original contract. And so the city is not essentially losing something. It's basically fulfilling a contract that goes back quite a few years. The other thing that I would point out is that by the time the project is built and the new increment collected, that's 2011. And so you basically have about 5 years of collections if the district isn't extended. So I think it's important that the district be extended. The district was properly authorized under law going back to 1988. By the Port Authority. And I think this just makes it problematic in moving forward.
Anybody else in the audience want to testify? The idea of putting a referendum on a TIF project. On the Larson Amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Chair.
Oh, Senator Sendrum.
You know, I spoke in pretty strong support of this project a couple of weeks ago, And so now I come here and you know, I'm trying to figure out this system a little bit, and it almost seems, you know, if we don't want this thing in Minnesota, I guess we don't have to have it. It looks like we're, you know, want to load it up with a TIF amendment, a unanimous vote by the members of the governing body, U.S.-made steel, a public sector labor agreement, a labor peace agreement, and so on and so forth. You know, I'm trying to figure this out in terms of, you know, do we really want this project? And I suspect if it was my bill, I probably wouldn't have any of those provisions in it. But I'd like to see this project go forward. But I'm a little disappointed at the at the approach we're taking toward it, and we ought to be welcoming these kind of businesses instead of loading them up with a lot of provisions. So just a comment.
Senator Ortman.
And Mr. Chair, I would just note that we let every other community that wants to do TIF, we give them permission to do that without requiring a referendum. I can understand why Senator Larson wants to provide the opportunity to residents. I've been trying to do the same thing for the sales tax for transit. But I think that the precedent here is terrible. We want to trust our local elected officials to make these decisions. They're here. They're telling us, just like every other community in this bill with TIF requests, that they would like to make this decision on behalf of their community, and they will stand accountable for those decisions. And Senator Larson's opposition is duly noted, but I think that we should continue on with our business and support this request for TIF.
Any question, members? On the Larson motion, everyone in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no?
No.
Motion does not prevail. Amendment's not adopted. Anything else, members? Thank you for showing Senator Larson the courtesy to offer his amendment, considering he can't be here tomorrow. Members, you can, if you'd like to take your stuff with you, you can. Whatever you'd like to leave on the table, you can. We're going to lock the room up and come back tomorrow morning at 8:30. Senator Ortman?
Mr. Chair, if we're going to be here tomorrow at 8:30, can you just preview what time on Friday we'll be here to do that bill? Are we doing it after session?
I believe we've already sent a notice out at 8:30 on Friday morning.
Okay.
And then this tax bill, if we can pass it out tomorrow, will be on the tax committee will meet at 8:30 Friday morning. We'll be on the floor Friday afternoon to take up this bill.
Thank you.
8:30 tomorrow morning, members. Senator Pogelner?
This is the only tax bill.
There's an education bill coming from finance, Mr. Chairman. This is the only tax bill. There's a bill, education finance bill, coming from the finance committee. This committee's adjourned.